Pacific Mornings on ABC Radio Australia.
So, there has been a warning, and landowner discontent may very well spiral out of control in Papua New Guinea as a result of liquefied gas project that is there in Hela Province. Now, Anthony Lowenstein, who's a journalist and author and filmmaker of Disaster Capitalism, he joins me now to discuss. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Anthony, Jubilee Australia Research Centre released a report called On Shaky Ground, which looks at the consequences of development failure. And it talks about the partly Australia-funded Papua New Guinea gas project. It also warns that landowner discontent may spiral out of control. What are your thoughts on this? Is civil war likely?
Look, civil war, I think, at the moment is not necessarily a given, and let's hope that's not the case. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in PNG, particularly in Bougainville, which we can get to a bit later. But one of the interesting things about this Jubilee report, and I might say the response from the Papua New Guinean government, is how familiar this whole awful scenario is. For decades now, since Australia, I guess you could say, allowed Papua New Guinea to become independent in the mid-1970s, there's been one after another of Australian and foreign investment companies working in Papua New Guinea, often in resources or minerals, and virtually every single one has not benefited the local people, despite the rhetoric saying that it would be. So the latest Jubilee report showing that the LNG plant, which had been promised to locals to build to help schools and infrastructure, has not come to pass, and there's definitely growing discontent in the areas in which the LNG plant operates. The government itself, of course, believes it's a wonderful project. The company claims it's a wonderful project, but sadly this is yet another example of the resource curse in Papua New Guinea.
Right, so the landowners in Hela Province are yet to receive royalties, and tension is escalating, including things like tribal violence and blockades and sabotage, and even incidents of hostage taking. So, in your experience, has this happened before in the region?
Constantly. As I say, one of the worst examples of that is Bougainville. Bougainville is a province of Papua New Guinea. There was a Rio Tinto mine there that operated in the 1970s and 80s that was a copper mine. And at the time, it was one of the largest copper mines in the world. The locals themselves were incredibly upset with the fact that they weren't getting benefits from that mine. A civil war was sparked, and about 20,000 Bougainvillians were killed over a 10-year period. And out of a population of about 200,000, there was a peace treaty signed in the late 1990s. And here we are decades later, and Bougainville is facing an independence vote next year, 2019. And obviously what they choose is, of course, up to them. But there's great pressure from the Bougainville government and indeed the Papua New Guinea government and the Australian government in some ways. If they do want independence, they're tying that vote to the reopening of big-scale mining. In other words, there is a complete, profound lack of imagination here when it comes to talking about what a future might look like for a place like Bougainville or indeed Papua New Guinea itself. Papua New Guinea is a beautiful country with huge and amazing natural resources, but time after time after time, these resources are abused for the benefit of outsiders and corrupt local politicians. So what many of us are arguing who spend time there, and indeed many locals in Papua New Guinea who don't get as much voice as they should, is there are alternatives to this idea of big-scale dirty mining, agriculture, tourism, as two examples. So Bougainville is often used as the example of what can go wrong. And although we're not at the stage yet in with the PNG LNG plant of a Bougainville scenario, thankfully, it's certainly possible it could escalate to that. And that's one of the warnings that Jubilee is making.
Indeed. Now, the ExxonMobil-led project attracted $500 million Australian government loan in 2009 and supplies 8 million tonnes of gas a year to Japan, South Korea and China. Now, the Jubilee report is considered to belong to a fairly left-wing think tank. Is there a threat of PNG military crackdown in Hela Province, do you think?
Well, there is definitely that risk. And I should just say, although, yeah, Jubilee itself may be a left-wing organisation, the facts themselves are not being questioned here, because ultimately what comes down to the fact, are locals benefiting? No. I mean, that's the bottom line. One speaks to locals in that area and they will tell you, we are not getting benefits from this project. So that clearly is a pretty important part of this conversation. There's no doubt that the PNG military is routinely offensive and committing abuses, not just in that area, but also as what happened in Bougainville, I might add. And, of course, the Australian government's role here is so important because Australia sees Papua New Guinea, in my experience, as a convenient client state of Australia. Although Papua New Guinea, on paper, is an independent country, has a seat at the United Nations, etc., it's in many ways not an independent country, meaning that its resources are routinely sold and exploited for international buyers. The Australian government has a great deal of influence in what the Papua New Guinean government does. Let's not forget Australia has left countless refugees Australia does not want on Manus Island. And Australia, of course, gives Papua New Guinea money almost as a reward for keeping those refugees hostage. Australia gives every year roughly $500 million of aid. But in many ways, as I argue in my film Disaster Capitalism, it's almost like an insurance policy against failure in our northern neighbour. In other words, Australia wants, in some ways, Papua New Guinea to remain dependent on them, but not to the extent where Papua New Guineans are coming in waves as refugees to Australia, if that makes sense. So I do think there is a real question here that Australia has made a conscious choice for decades. And the internal documents that WikiLeaks released a few years ago prove this. Australia knows the Papua New Guinean government is corrupt and has been for years, but are content to leave that situation continuing because Australian companies are benefiting financially from the resources in Papua New Guinea. It's a very, very dirty, ugly relationship. And many locals in Papua New Guinea are increasingly raising their voices and saying, what is Australia getting from this relationship, and should we have much more distance between ourselves and the Australian government?
Right, now, infrastructure is looked at in the report also. How integral is infrastructure in scenarios such as this at this particular time in the relationship?
Well, they're vital because the promises that the companies make to locals when they're trying to get their consent is all about this. It's about we're going to build schools and health centres and infrastructure and better roads. And the truth is, in these areas where the LNG plant exists, as what happened in Bougainville, as is what happened in other parts of Papua New Guinea, those promises don't come true. And understandably, locals get pretty upset with that, as they have every right to do. And certain local politicians also express that disquiet too, but too often the central government, at the moment the Prime Minister's Peter O'Neill, either supports the project or denies there are any problems. And we should not forget, when Jubilee released its report a few weeks ago, Peter O'Neill was asked about this and claimed that it was fake news, using a Donald Trump term, and then acknowledged he hadn't actually read the report. And then since this report has come out, many local politicians in these areas are coming out and saying, this report is absolutely accurate. We are not getting the benefits that we were promised. So infrastructure is central in a country which should have huge amounts of benefit to locals when so much money is in the ground in Papua New Guinea. And I think one of the questions moving forward here, not just in Bougainville or in the Hela province where the LNG plant is natural extraction the best way for Papua New Guinea to benefit? And indeed, is that the way that a country like PNG should move forward, where over now four decades we've seen project after project after project not provide benefits to locals? And I think this is one of the arguments that I make in Disaster Capitalism, where people who are living outside are making a fortune. Australian companies, mineral companies, resource companies, Exxon, Oil Search, they're doing very, very well. And the companies are looking to go back into Bougainville at the moment to try to exploit the untapped copper and gold resources there, also claiming that we will benefit local people by doing so. But history proves that's actually not correct. So unless there are seriously changing ways in which these projects are designed, locals will not benefit. So they're pretty upset about it, and rightly so. And their voices, sadly, don't get much traction in Australia.
Right, so Anthony, with your book and your film, Disaster Capitalism, you looked at what had happened before, not only in PNG and Bougainville, but other areas in the world. How do you see the Jubilee report, considering the work that you've done already in terms of how disasters fuel capitalism?
in many ways, I see the Jubilee report in a very conservative way, and I say that in a positive term. What I mean by that is that it's a very sober report. It speaks to locals on the ground. They also did a report a few years ago about Bougainville, looking at the feelings of Bougainvillians moving forward towards independence in 2019, and if they wanted big-scale mining to return to the area, and the vast majority of locals said no, despite, I might add, what elements in the local government and the PNG government and the Australian government all say that the locals wanted. So one of the things I find in the film and the book, and I spend time in Afghanistan and Haiti, and the book also we look at US, UK, Australia and Greece, is not just the question of natural resources, but also the ways in which various issues these days are outsourced for profit. So it could be immigration, war, aid, detention centres, all those kind of areas. And too often, locals are not benefiting from these projects. And the result, of course, is civil strife, often violence, aggression. And one of the calls that I make in the film, and indeed the Jubilee report says something quite similar, is listen to what locals are saying. It's a very uncontroversial thing to argue, but listen to what they're saying, because what they're regularly saying is we have every right to benefit from, for example, resources in the ground under our land. Give us equal rights to access to our lands. Build what you say you're going to build, roads, schools, health centres, etc. I mean, the metrics of life in Papua New Guinea or Afghanistan or Haiti at the moment is so bad, despite the fact that the international community has invested billions and billions of dollars. So we have to ask ourselves, where is that money going? Who is it benefiting? And why is it benefiting those people over locals? And ultimately, I think it says a very awful thing about how we view people in non-Western countries, which namely is, and I say we as in the West, often doesn't view people in non-Western countries in an equal way, and their voices are too often not heard in the West. And I think one of the things that I'm trying to do and other journalists are trying to do as well is to say, listen to what these people are saying, that they're claiming that these projects are not helping them and they don't actually want them on their territory. And they want to look at alternatives, as I said, such as tourism or agriculture. And in Bougainville, they're both viable alternatives.
Yes.
But often they're not given the chance to exploit those opportunities.
Anthony, it's great to have you here on Pacific Mornings. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Anthony Lowenstein, journalist and author and filmmaker of Disaster Capitalism, here on Pacific Mornings.
ABC Radio Australia.
Sharing a Pacific Morning.